Let's go to page 348 in your book, Footsteps of Messiah, and we're looking at the second coming of the Messiah, which I wish the rapture would actually happen so I can get out of here. I'm kind of getting tired of it all and watching everything, and I have, cultural fatigue, I guess if you want to say. I'm just getting tired of looking at the culture and how decrepit it's becoming. Anyway, so we'll look at the glorious second coming. And I think what I want to start in on is Habakkuk 3 on the bottom of that page, towards the bottom on page 348. Habakkuk gives a picture of the remnant's prayer of Messiah to save them. And if you read with me, I'll go through that and we'll parse it out a little bit. Okay. A prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet, Shigi Yanoth. O Yahweh, I have heard the report of you, and I am afraid. Well, yeah, because the report that Habakkuk's hearing is a future report of the terrible day of the Lord, the tribulation period, and that Israel's going to have to go through it. And then the glorious coming of Yahweh will come. So that's why he's a little shaken up about it. But here's his prayer. O Yahweh, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. So the idea that Habakkuk's talking about is this is the remnant's prayer, future Israel, praying to Yahweh to remember them, to remember the covenant that he has made with them, the Abrahamic covenant, and then obviously the new covenant, and also to remember their spiritual salvation as well as their physical salvation. So then he goes into God came from Teman and the Holy One from Mount Paran. And it's interesting that Habakkuk even remarks that Messiah, the Savior, will come out of Petra, out of this place of Bozra in Jordan. Because this is not in Teman and Mount Paran are not in Israel. They are in Jordan right there by where Israel will be kept up in Petra. So even Habakkuk mentions they are in Petra. And so that's where Jesus goes first to save them. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And his brightness, that's the Shekinah, was the light. He had rays coming forth from his hand. Now, so imagine, as you see the Shekinah glory of Messiah coming back, that these rays, or the other way it's translated in Hebrew is horns of power coming from his very hand. So a lot of prophecy guys explain with Habakkuk that he speaks the words to his enemies and you'll see them dissolve in a little bit. But a lot of times he's using his hands with the rays, so to speak, or the horns of light coming from his hands, killing people in the Antichrist's destruction and his armies. Anyway, he goes, and there was hiding of his power, or where is his power hidden, it should be translated. Before him went the pestilence, or this plague, and the plague is going to come from his mouth. It's a plague of destruction that Messiah speaks. And fiery bolts went forth at his feet. So the bolts of lightning are coming from Messiah's feet, rays like a sun ray coming from his hand. So you can almost imagine what that would look like with him coming back riding on a cherub. It's just like a light show of lightning and sun rays coming, beaming from him. Pretty amazing how they saw this. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations, or divided the nations, and the eternal mountains were scattered, and the everlasting hills did bow. Notice what mountains and what hills were they? What's the qualification of the mountains and the hills? They're eternal. So where are they located at? They're not on earth. Heaven's mountains. Right? Yes. Yeah. Because with the second coming, the misnomer that a lot of people have is that he comes first to the Mount of Olives. And that's actually a misnomer. He does that second. He first comes to Teman and Paran is the area of Bozra or Petra. If you look on modern map today, it's that southern area of Petra, or sorry, Jordan, where the Edomites had. And that's where the remnant of Jews will be there. So he goes there first to save them. And so then, as he saves them, he starts fighting the Antichrist's army, as you'll see in just a bit. And then he makes his way up to Jerusalem, to the Mount of Olives. So the second coming, when we come back with him, the first stop is Petra, to save the Jews there. So if you go on Google and type in Petra and look at the places in Petra, the place of the Edomites, that's where Israel will be for 3.5 years hiding out from the Antichrist. And it literally is a mountainous sheep gate. That's what Bozrah means. It means sheep gate. It is a mountainous sheep gate that actually encloses, and the only way you can get in is through a very narrow sliver. Indiana Jones went through it, and you can see it on the movie, The Last Crusade, which they were running a marathon this last weekend, which I watched all three movies. And anyway, they go in through horseback. You only get in on horseback or you walk, and it's a very narrow sliver to get in there. And then once you're in, it opens up, but you can't get a tank. You can't get anything in there. It's amazing. So God has prepared that for Israel to be protected in the last days. So that's what he's talking about. Yeah, it's Hebrew parallelism. So Hebrew parallelism will name one thing and then it will restate something else in a different way, but it's actually the same thing. It's Hebrew parallelism. You see it in the Psalms all over the place. And so that's what that Hebrew parallelism is saying, is that he's coming from Petra or Bozra, which, you know, that was the route too. They came from that area where Moses took Israel from the Exodus into the Promised Land. So Moses is a type of Messiah, points to the Messiah. So now the fulfillment now is happening with Jesus. He's bringing them back into the Promised Land. And he starts where Bozrah is at. Yes, it's the Shekinah holiness. And so that's why a lot of prophecy guys include this as the primary way he kills them, is from the Shekinah coming from his actual hands, like this, you know. And you see, you know, you think about, you know, movies where people's lightning bolts are coming from their feet, like I think about the Emperor in Star Wars. But it's the idea that these rays of Shekinah glory light are coming from his very fingertips and killing people. That's the power of God, man. It's just, it's really amazing to think about that. And then bolts of lightning coming from his feet. It's like, whoa, man. And that's why thunder and lightning is always associated to God and the throne of God. You know, when John's there or anyone else, they'll hear thunderings and lightnings around the throne. And it's coming, it's emanating, not from the environment, it's emanating from God himself. So the earthly representation of thunder and lightning should remind you of God. Because that emanates from him, from his very person. So it accompanies Messiah as he comes back. And so, you know, if lightning bolts are coming from his feet, lightning kills people. You could easily see how it's like an electrical storm and lights and all kinds of things going on around him. It's amazing, all of that. Let's return to the eternal mountains and the everlasting hills. He is not only in the second coming shaking the foundations of the earth, and there's a lot of cataclysmic things that are happening around the earth at the second coming. All heaven is being shaken by him. Okay? Where did the Greeks get the idea of Mount Olympus? Where did the Babylonians, where did all of these pagan cultures get the idea that their gods were on a mountain like Mount Olympus? Because in Scripture, God is on Mount Zion. Okay? You'll hear references to that. It's not only the earthly Mount Zion, but it is the heavenly one. Heaven is on top of a mountain. I don't know if you've read this, but let me read this real quick. So he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. Did you catch that? A great and high mountain. And John's being transported into heaven. But he says he sees the new Jerusalem on a mountaintop. Where's the mountain at? It's the eternal mountains in heaven. There's mountains in heaven. And on top of the mountains is the temple of God, Mount Jerusalem. Okay, where did God put his temple? On top of a mountain. Mount Moriah. Now, it's only 3,000 feet, but it is a mount, right? And so when he does his earthly temple and tabernacle, he puts it on a mountain to represent what is going on in heaven. So the eternal mountains are being shaken. All of heaven is being shaken by the return of Messiah. So it kind of gives you a better glimpse of what heaven is like. There are mountains there, eternal, and hills, mountains and hills that are eternal in the way God puts his temple up. Now, that totally makes sense when I look at pagan cultures. And in most of the pagan myth stories, their gods are on where? On mountains. Totally makes sense. You can see the corruption of the truth in the pagan myths. Mount Olympus. Zeus is on Mount Olympus with the other gods. Guess who the other gods are, by the way, in the Bible? There's only one God, obviously, that. But where did they get the idea of lesser divine beings? Where did they get that idea from? They called them gods, but in the Bible, what are they? They're angels. Right. Just like in Revelation, I saw the seven angels around the throne, or the cherubim. They took them in the pagan cultures as lesser gods or demigods. We understand them as high-ranking angels. That the high-ranking angels, like the seven angels that are around the throne of God, are considered the council of God. They are on his heavenly council. They deliberate. They talk. They talk amongst each other. They are high-ranking angels. Satan was part of that high-ranking angelic order, right? Michael and Gabriel are. The four cherubim around the throne are. These are high-ranking angels. Okay, when the pagan cultures took that truth and corrupted it, they made them into Poseidon or, you know, whatever. And what it was is these angels were over those areas in charge of that, just like they're over countries right now. They're in charge of countries. And God assigned them to that, to watch out for those places. Like Michael is assigned to Israel, right? In Daniel chapter 12. That's his territory. That's who he watches over. That's where the term in Enoch comes from, a non-biblical book, the watchers. Because they watched. That was their job, is to watch. Watch what was going on. Report back to God. What's going on? God knows, but he was using angels in that sense. Well, in that sense, that's where the pagan mythologies came from about these demigods or whatnot. And interesting enough, so like in the Aztec and Mayan religions, they have these demigods that look serpentine with wings. I wonder who that is. Serpentine, but the thing has wings? Yeah, it's Satan. Well, there's 70 of them of the council, and I know what you're referring to. Let me tell you what it says. Moses is telling Israel that he divided the 70 nations according, and your translation is wrong, not to the sons of Israel, but to the sons of God. And that brings a whole new different light on things, which exactly corresponds with Daniel chapter 10 with territorial angels and territorial demonics. As they were fighting for and answered Daniel's prayer. You remember that? It took them 21 days because the prince of Persia was withstanding Gabriel. You remember that whole angelic scene? Okay. The mistranslation that a lot of guys will do is say, well, he divided the nations according to the sons of Israel. It does not say the sons of Israel. It's a mistranslation. The older texts say sons of God. It's Ha Elohim. Bana Ha Elohim. Sons of God. Anytime you see the reference in the Old Testament to the Bana Ha Elohim, that is the sons of God. Just like Job chapter 1, the sons of God presented themselves before God. And why are they presenting themselves before God? It is the counsel of God. They are deliberating before God. And then Ha-Satan comes and presents himself before the council and God himself. You remember in Job chapter 1. Okay. So in what Moses is saying is that when the Babylonian tower happened, and he scattered the nations. How many nations were scattered? The table of nations is what? 70. Well, if you marry what happened to Babylonia to the 70 nations, and then you marry it to what Moses is saying in Deuteronomy 32, I believe, or 33, it's one of those chapters. Moses says it was according to the Benaha Elohim. And the Benaha Elohim are in charge of those particular nations to watch out for them as they divide it up. So they're called the watchers in Jewish literature. That's where the term watcher comes. That's why the Enochian literature, the book of Enoch, calls the Benaha Elohim watchers. They're watching. They're watching over the nations that they're assigned to. Now, the counterpart to that is Satan knows this and he counters with that, right? He puts his own guys in those certain territories to offset that. So that's why when Gabriel is coming to give a message to Daniel, Daniel is where? He's in Babylonia, but Persia is in control. And guess who is opposing Gabriel? The prince of Persia, which is a high-ranking demon that's now been appointed to Persia by Satan. So Satan copycats what God does. So you have good angels probably that are assigned to America, and you have bad angels assigned to America. You have good angels assigned to the churches. Every church has an angel assigned to them as a watcher. But Satan, what does he probably do? Puts his own angel, his own fallen angel, assigned to that particular church. So you have both going on at the same time. That's why that their spiritual battle is going on. And Paul names it powers, principalities, and powers, or ranks of demons, obviously, that correspond with the ranks of angels. So I hope that answered your question. I think that a lot of people don't know that. But that's the counsel of God. So you'll see in many Old Testament texts that God is in his counsel. You'll say counsel, and it's not human counsels. Who is he counseling with? Who's the Trinitarian? Who is the Trinity counseling with? It's the high-ranking angels that are over certain territories, and he's giving them assignments and telling them what to do and what not. Why in the Book of Revelation is angels sending all the judgments? Because that's how he uses his power. He uses it through angels. Now, we're looking at the second coming. That's direct intervention of God, but most of the time he uses angels to do that, right? So one day you will see these high-ranking angels, and believe it or not, you will be above them. That is bizarre. That one day you'll be over Michael. He's one of the highest-ranked angels. Right now you're not above him, but in the future you will be high-ranked above him, because Hebrews makes that abundantly clear, that we will outrank angels based on our relationship with Messiah. And that really blew a lot of the Jews away. They had no idea that they would ever be ranked higher than an angel. But we do, because of Messiah taking on flesh. So anyway, that's a little digression. But the idea of these mountains, again, that's real. So you can see the corruptions in the stories. Why do you think from the Tower of Babel, all the ancient cultures built a pyramid-shaped structure? Because the pyramid represents a mountain. And what would they do on top of the Aztec mountains, on the pyramid? They would do their sacrificing, right? I mean, it's amazing when you look at the ancient cultures. There's a corruption of the truth, and it goes back to what they originally knew about heaven. They knew, even though it wasn't written down, they knew far more than what you think they knew. Far more, just by the evidence of the corruption. They knew about a flood. They knew about the clash of the Titans, or the Titans in Phoenician, or in Hebrew, the clash of the Satans, which was Genesis 6. They knew about the Tower of Babel. They knew about all that stuff. They knew about blood sacrifice. How did they know about blood sacrifice? How did they know that human sacrifice outranks animal sacrifice? Why were the Aztecs, the Polynesians, all doing human sacrifice? They knew something, but it was corrupted, obviously. So anyway, food for thought, right? But anyway, that's the mountains of heaven. And I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction. These are the Ethiopians and the Midianites, and that is trying to tell you something. And let me give you one more phrase, and you'll probably get it with this clue in Habakkuk. The curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. The curtains. Cushan, the tents of Cushan and Midian is where Moses got his bride. Right? That's where the Israelites went. That's actually where the real Mount Sinai is. It's not in the Sinai Peninsula like today. That's a Catholic site, by the way. Don't be fooled by that. They just picked it out of thin air. The real site is in Saudi Arabia. That's where Midian was. That's where Moses took them. And by the way, video you can get, Fire on the Mountain, I think it's called, or something like that, Fire on the Mountain, by Bob Cornick. We were able to sneak into Saudi Arabia, man, and it's all there. There's a mountaintop that's burnt on the top. Down the bottom, you can see the layout where 2 million people would have been. The altars, there's 12 altars around this mountain, which is exactly what Moses did. It's all there, but Saudi Arabia won't let you get to it. And every Saudi Arabian Arab says, oh yeah, that's the Mount of Moses. But you can't get in there in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Have you seen that video? Yeah, they won't let anyone get in there, man. And I think it's called Fire on the Mountain if you ever get it. It's probably on YouTube. And Bob Cornick, with a C, did the video. And they snuck in there, and it'll blow your socks off, man. And they found the crossing of the Red Sea. It's not where Egypt and Sinai is. It's on the other side. There's a land bridge underneath, and it's like it goes up. And there's a land bridge. It's still underwater, but then it just drops down in that area. But on that land bridge, they found coral in the shape of wagon wheels. And it's all these weapons and stuff are along this land bridge going into Saudi Arabia from the Sinai Peninsula. And, of course, the wood's gone, but the coral shape is the exact shape of Pharaoh's wheels. And it has the same prongs. If you do an archaeology look, study it for it, and they've done all that, it's the same spokes for the wheels, and they're right there in the ocean. But Saudi Arabia will not let you mess around in that area. Why wouldn't they? Because Muslims destroy every Jewish or Christian site. That's what they're doing in Israel. They don't want any remembrance of that. They're not fans of anything from the Bible. So if you go to places like in Hebron or Bethlehem or any of these other places that Palestinian controlled, they destroyed them. They just destroyed them. The tombs of like Sarah and all those other people, it's just destroyed. And they're brutal. Look what they do to the Temple Mount. They were taking bulldozers to the Temple Mount. And they were digging up all this archaeological nightmare stuff, and they were just dumping them on the side of a cliff because they don't care. Because Islam tries to erase any memory or history of Christianity, especially in Judaism. So they won't let anyone in there. They don't want you to know that Moses' place is there. But if you get the video, it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Check it out. Because you're right, that burnt area, you could see it's on one level of the mountain. It's huge. And you can see how 2 million people could have sat. If you go to the Catholic site in Sinai Peninsula, you look around, you're like, 2 million people couldn't fit here. There's no way. Maybe a few thousand, but not 2 million people. No way. And, of course, the Catholics just did it because that's how they did things. That's the spot. Let's build a church on it. And then that became what they did. Yeah, they did find the rock. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in that video, too. And you can see where the water came out of it and gushed out. And it's this big, giant rock. It's split right in half, and it's still there today. And the Arabs are like, yeah, that's the rock that Moses struck. And they're like, they just nonchalant go on with it. I'm like, what? It's Fire on the Mountain or something like that? Or the Real Evidence of Mount Sinai by Bob Cornick. Cornuck is spelled C-O-R-N-U-K-E. You could probably buy the video somewhere, or you can rent it, probably on Amazon. You can rent it. It's phenomenal. It's the best work he's done. These guys were investigators. Go ahead. What is it? Mountain of Fire. Okay. That's worth getting into your library, Mountain of Fire. And they did some other ones, too. investigative things. I think the next one they're trying to do is the Ark. I think they were working on the Ark. Noah's Ark, not the Ark of the Covenant. But get that video. I think you'll enjoy it. Fascinating. I've seen what you're talking about, and what the Jews, a lot of the religious Jews, know the Ark is still buried in there, because they believe that the best evidence is that when Jeremiah knew the Babylonians were coming in, he hid the Ark in a subchamber in down, because Jews believe in vertical holiness, if that makes sense, that the site can be holy, like where the Ark of the Covenant was in the temple. But if you remove it and put it underground in the same location, then the vertical holiness works as well. So the idea, and a lot of the Jews, I believe it's the best evidence, it's not in Ethiopia, it's not anywhere else, it's right there in that Temple Mount, but it's down in a subterranean cavern. And like he was saying, they started burrowing in from the western wall, the Jews did, because they knew what they were looking for. They know they're looking for the Ark. Okay, they know it's there, and they got deep into it, and the Muslims found out and said, if you go any further and don't seal up this hole, this tunnel, we're going to start a holy war with you. And so they sealed it off. You can go there. I was around the western wall, and you can see the seal where it's at. They were going right for it, dude. They were going. They knew exactly where they were going with it. So right now they're holding off. And I think what's going to happen is once the Antichrist gets that arrested for them, they are going to burrow right through it and get the Ark to put it in that new temple they're going to build. I guarantee it. They know where it's at. Because, if Jeremiah was told to buy a plot of land because Israel was coming back, the whole thing, he knew Israel would come back after being exiled. He was not about to let them take that Ark. And so there's hints in a lot of the other Jewish text that Jeremiah actually hit it, knowing they were coming in. So anyway, good food for thought and stuff. But this last reference I want to make you aware of, that this Cushan and Midian is where Moses got his bride, and it's where the Exodus happened. And also notice the curtains of the land of Midian did tremble. What do curtains do? They part. You see the reference? What is Habakkuk referring to? Back to the parting of the Red Sea that allowed Israel to escape into Midian. That's where they went. So that land bridge that you'll see on the video, that's where they went. That's the sea parted like a curtain, and they went across. So the reference in Habakkuk to that is this same God that parted the Red Sea is now back. He's back on planet Earth. And he's going to part something else. It's not going to be the sea. He's going to part mountains. Because when his foot touches the Mount of Olives, it splits. It parts in two and creates a very wide valley called the Valley of Jehoshaphat that is not in existence today. But in that Valley of Jehoshaphat, he will commence judgment there of the sheep and goats. And so he's coming back to part things. He's parting the nations. He's going to part mountains when he comes back. So it's kind of a reference to that, pointing backwards, but also pointing forwards. Anyway, any questions on that? So what it's doing, what I want you to see with the second coming, is that everything that happened in Israel's past pointed forward to this event. The Exodus, leading them into the promised land, Joshua going in and fighting, all of that was typologies of the final victory of Messiah. Now, as we'll get into this next week, you're going to start seeing Messiah fight. Okay, what is reminiscent that you should pick up on is Joshua. You should see pictures of Joshua that pointed forward to Messiah doing battle with the Antichrist and his armies and taking control of the promised land. The whole picture of Joshua going into the promised land was a picture of Messiah fighting for Israel. What is Messiah's name? Yeshua. And Joshua is Yahshua. That's not a mistake. it's the same name, derivative. It's a little bit, Yahshua is a little bit derivative, but it still means always salvation. So when he said to Mary, name your kid Yeshua, there was a reference to Joshua, the general that led the Israeli army back into the promised land, which Messiah is leading Israel back into its promised land. Pretty amazing when you see all that. Pretty amazing when you see all that. Pretty amazing when you see all that. Pretty amazing when you see all that.